Tonight's interview is with Helloween singer Andy Daris. And Andy, great to have you on here for the show. And talk about the new album, Seven Sinners. I found it to be an outstanding record. Really heavy. Just oh my God. It's one of the best albums you guys have released in a long time. And, you know, talk a little bit about what went into it. And I guess we'll start there.
He had this artwork on his iPhone for his demo song. So when I listened to the demos, I saw this artwork he put in, just not to have these boring two notes of the iTunes artwork, you know. And I just asked him, what is it? I said, oh, it's a seven-folded star. He saw it on the internet. He thought it's great. I said, so where does it come from? Seven-folded star? No, the six demo star and pentagrams and all that stuff. And he said, no, it's the opposite. It's actually the good thing. It's like the may the force be with you kind of thing. And said, okay, tell me more about it. And then he came up with this mythology of the seven sinners being sent down to earth in the name of the devil doing bad things, blah blah blah. And the only positive power against them would be the sevenfolded star. I said, well, that sounds like a cool thing, cool artwork for the new album. So yeah, that's been it actually.
I thought one of the most genius things and one of the best things about this record is the song Are You Metal? And I just thought that title and that song was just brilliant. And Andy, talk about what that song is about. You know, are you asking people a question, are they metal? And talk about the meaning behind that track and really give us an insight on what you wrote that song about.
It's actually a kind of self-description. It's like looking in the mirror and realizing that my heart beats for metal and rock and roll and all the great stuff, but nevertheless, it's normally rock and roll or metal, stuff like that, is meant to be a more open-minded society. Like the metalheads should be the rock and rollers and the party guys and whatever, which is, in matter of fact, true in very much ways. But I realized that I'm a very, very conservative listener. In matter of only listening to metal music, and anything else doesn't count. So it has to be rock and roll, it has to be hard rock or metal. Anything else next to it would not count. So, I actually saw myself smiling because aren't we meant to be the more open-minded people? But we are, in matter of fact, not. If everybody out there, the typical metalhead, is like me, he is probably very conservative in that manner as well. So he probably only listens to metal music the way I do, and anything else is, we don't want to listen to it. So I thought this is a funny story. So are you metal?
You know. I guess I am.
that's what I realized. I think 99% are exactly that way. And honestly, I'm proud of it. You know, I just describe myself with a twinkle in my eye. So it's not meant to be too serious, because actually I'm proud of it, because we know that metal music or rock music is the only music out there being really played by hands, and there is no computer behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm actually proud of that music.
This album seems to have a lot of modern-sounding drum lines and just a lot of modern-sounding sounds on it. And, you know, we just talked about the Are You Metal song and what it's about. And, Andy, talk about, you know, what influenced this record. I mean, was this album influenced by a lot of, say, newer metal bands out there today?
Well, certainly not on purpose. So, but nevertheless, you cannot get away from all the influences of the great music you're listening through and to. Like in 2 years songwriting, for example, you don't stop listening to your favorite bands, or you get to love new bands. Like in for my part, for example, I learned to love I think they're American band called Deftones. Mm-hmm. And I really fell in love with them because it's so far away from the stuff I do, and it's always very, very good to have something like completely away from what you're doing. And mm-hmm. still, it's pure metal here and there, but it's arrangements and like everything in there, like they do it harmony wise. It's genius. It's like I really love it, but it's definitely nothing I may copy for my music, because we're power metal, melodic speed metal band. So nevertheless, I'm quite sure that even bands like Deftones more or less influenced me in whatever way. I could not tell you where, on which particular second, on which particular song on the album, but I'm quite sure that whatever you listen to in private time is definitely influencing your
Mm-hmm. Now, you just talked about music completely computerized and still being played with your fingers, Andy. And one of the things that I've noticed over the past, say, few years is that many bands just aren't able to play live what they do in the studio. In fact, you see a lot of people, you know, they go on stage and they do stuff in the studio and they have to have a backing track and they have to have this and they have to have that. But, you know, there are very few bands nowadays that actually do everything themselves and actually do not rely on a bunch of equipment to do the playing for them, but they actually play it themselves. And a good example of that, say, Iron Maiden. You know, they're a band that really just does awesome with stuff like that. I mean, they can still do it even after all this time. And Andy, do you think this is a big problem with a lot of bands, especially nowadays with computerizing everything?
Well, in matter of fact, I more or less see the problem in the feeling which comes across when you listen to an album. Meanwhile, you listen to great melodies and great songs, and you don't actually you don't exactly know why it doesn't touch you the way it should, because you know it's a great melody. And you know that probably 10 or 15 years ago, you probably would have freaked out because it's such a great song. But suddenly there's something missing. I, for my part, realized that I miss the life. I miss that magic which comes across with, for example, a drummer who is not playing constantly on the static click from a computer, but who is actually free to speed it up when, for example, the refrain demands it or breaks it down in a heavier verse or whatever. This stuff is missing nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I definitely realize that this is exactly what I miss about everything there. Mainly when we recorded the new album without click track. Then again, you probably need a hell of a drummer to do so. But unfortunately, we have exactly that guy in the band. I think for himself it was something like a revelation as well, because he suddenly saw himself playing without a click, and he did not even know that he can do it. Mm-hmm. But when he did it, I saw the glimmer in his eyes. It was a glimmer in his eyes. He was very proud of himself. You know, this is like the day for him to finally realize, hey, I don't need a click. I actually live the song the way it is. I may play it the way I feel it. Mm-hmm. So and suddenly you listen to your own music and you realize, hey, there it's back. It's got exactly what I miss so much on everything else there. It's back. The feeling, the magic, everything is like, sure. I mean, it's a lot of work that you have to put into the recording when you do it that way, because all the musicians have to play in the studio the way they used to do it, like with the drummer. They have to guideline him. You cannot only record some pilot tracks and tell the drummer, that's it, now you play along his drums to our pilot tracks. No, you have to play with him take by take by take by take. Mm-hmm. You know, because he's always playing in a different way. Sometimes a bit more speedier than the last version, sometimes a bit slower there, and you know. So, but it's a lot of fun, I have to say. When you find yourself in the studio and really playing as a band, it's bringing back a lot of fun.
Now, one of the things I found interesting about the record is, and being in a band myself and recording albums and stuff like that, is that you recorded the album in 432 hertz. And explain to that to people why you did that, and explain to people what that actually means, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people that I know were a little bit confused about that. But, you know, talk about that a little bit and why you recorded the album in that specific frequency.
Well, that came across with the whole Seven Sinner mythology. We thought if there is a frequency, it was actually the good frequency, and then we should use that against the evil frequency. Mm-hmm. We more or less fell in love with that. May the force be with you. Mm-hmm. We are all fans of that. So, and there is this frequency. Everybody says this is the frequency of Earth, of the universe, of everything, which is like 8 hertz. They measured. Mm-hmm. So multiplying 8 hertz, yeah, sooner or later end up with 432 hertz, which I thought is a great idea, and we wanted to do it sooner than later, because I mean, I don't want to sit there in 20 years and bugger myself because I've never did it. I wanted to try it now.
Yeah.
Just to find out how it works, how it sounds. If it sounds different, I don't know. It sounds great, but the proof would be when you would have a comparison. So you would have the same recording on 440 hertz, and then you go A-B comparison, then you would probably say it's better or it's worse or it's equal. So you can't prove it, but never playing, I think, more than 30 hertz, so it's nearly half a tone deeper. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I personally would have preferred 442, because this is the sexual frequency.
Now, I'd expect a comment like that from Wykie. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I could see him saying something funny and crazy like that.
Yeah, well, probably he will say exactly that one. You know, 442 is meant to be the more sexual, erotic frequency, which there's no proof either. So, yeah, we just tried it and it sounds great.
Now, we just talked about the song Are You Metal, which is the track you wrote, of course, and the single off the new album. And talk about some of the other songs you wrote, like Smile of the Sun, Long Live the King, Far Into the Future, and stuff like that. And I'm just curious what you wrote these things about, and many fans are curious what the lyrics are about of these songs. And just talk about that for a little bit, and talk about each one of the tracks you wrote and what, you know, what's behind each one.
This is again, it's just something I ask myself: how is the way I live, and am I a good guy, am I a bad guy? And honestly, I found out that there are several little things where I may not call myself a good guy. So at the end of the day, I think it's always good when you don't ask too much about your sins or little sins you're doing and committing, because I actually don't want to know when I'm doing a bad thing. If God would say, you know, for this you may go to hell, I actually don't want to know, because honestly, I live much better when I don't know it, you know. So it's where the sinners go is a different way of praying. I pray to my God and ask him to please not let me know when I'm doing a stupid thing down here on earth, because I don't want to know it. I just want to go on living my life the way I want to. Then we have, let me see, what's the next Andy tune? Oh yeah, Long Live the King. Long Live the King was written around about 1.5 years ago, actually, when I learned the sad news that Ronnie James Dio had cancer. So I decided to make a song for my most, favorite heroes like Judas Priest and Ronnie James Dio, because these guys helped me, well, singing. Helped me on playing guitar, helped me to find my way of singing, and it always was a plan to dedicate a song for my old hero. So I definitely will write another song dedicated to Kiss, for example, because they are a big influence in my life as well. Nevertheless, the sad truth is that Ronnie now is dead, and I did not want to release it directly for to his dead. I actually wanted to wait, because it looks like a stupid vulture when you go out there mm-hmm. and tell the people, oh, this is a song I wrote for Ronnie. Everybody would think, oh, look at this vulture. He wants to make money mm-hmm. by the death of Ronnie. And this is actually exactly what I did not want to. That's why I actually put it onto the album now, that late. Nevertheless, it was meant for him, and maybe he's even able to listen to it where he is. I don't know. That would be great. This is a very speedy song, actually, and it describes my first experience being on a festival down there in Germany, Monsters of Rock Festival, with Judas Priest and Ronnie James Dio. It was 1987, I think, and I was so blown away that this actually was probably the key day of my life.
Mm-hmm. You know, in all your years in playing shows and festivals, did you ever get to meet Dio?
Never had a chance to say hello. Like, I know the guys from Judas Priest. I had a chance to play with them on a few festivals, but I unfortunately never had a chance to meet Ronnie. Yeah, well. Then there is... What else did I write? Oh, yeah, The Smile of the Sun. This is probably the ballad on the album. If you would listen to the song without... knowing the rest of the album, you would never come up with the idea that this is a ballad, though it's got some slow verses, but the rest of it is everything else but not a ballad. Well, that's around about the subject that if I take your favorite thing away from you, whatever it is, could be your guitar, it could could be your computer, it could be your lady, whatever. It just describes how important it would be for me that that this favorite thing in my life, the most important thing in my life, would miss. So I probably would die. So I would not see any sense to go on with my life if you would take that away from me. Whatever that is for you or for everybody else, you have to answer for yourself. But that's it's a more or less a philosophical subject, I would say. Then what else? Oh yeah, the future. We definitely would have to connect with the intro where there is Not Yet Today, stupid title, but I had to name it Not Yet Today because that's exactly what a friend of mine always said when it came to the big question. He always asked himself if he would actually kill himself when his lady would die. His lady was in coma for 3 months, and he was sitting there next to her inside and in the hospital for 3 months, and he was always saying Not Yet Today because still there's hope. Everybody else said, like the doctors and the professors said, there's probably not a big chance that she's waking up again because it looks like a constant coma, and sooner or later when they would switch off the machines, she would die anyway. And but he never lost hope. But his plan was when she would pass away, he would definitely follow. That's mainly the whole song, Far in the Future, is talking about his ups and downs and his efforts to cause a reaction. So he even played heavy metal in the hospital room because that is her favorite music. Didn't cause any reaction. Then he thought maybe I should annoy her, and he even played her rap music and dance music because he knew that she hates that, you know. And he never lost the belief that she would wake up. But the funny thing is that the doctors always told him that he should not actually have any hope because they would say 99.9% this fight is lost already. Nevertheless, it's a happy end because she really woke up like 3 months later. She went 3.5 weeks through rehab and she's fine, up and running again. But this is a very hard story, so that's why I put it into an 8 or 9 minute song, because you need a lot of parts to go through all the different stages of his suffering, you know. Mm-hmm.
The last two Helloween albums are pretty heavy records, and at least for you guys, they're pretty heavy. And was this an intentional thing?
Well, for the Seven Sinners, I would say it's the logical follow-up to the acoustic best-of album we did. I remember that everybody in the band was suffering big time during the acoustic production because you were not even allowed to look at an electric guitar, not speaking about touching an amplifier, you know. So this was a very boring thing for a metal band to actually see yourself only and exclusively with a stupid acoustic guitar. So nothing against acoustic guitars, but I always say if I would have liked to play acoustic guitar, I would have bought an acoustic guitar in the first place when I was 15, and not an electric guitar. You know, I'm a metal freak, so I want to make noise there. And that's probably the logical follow-up is everybody after production like this, like the unarmed production, like the acoustic album, you come back home and you're just relieved to finally, well, connect your guitar to the amplifier and hook up your Engel or your Marshall or whatever you play at home and do some noise again. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's very normal that your first ideas you come up with are a bit harder than they usually would be.
I'm glad you brought that up. Speaking of the unarmed album, why did you decide to record an album like that with a bunch of non-metal versions of Helloween songs?
Well, actually, it was about having fun. So we just wanted to have some stupid acoustic versions, like more or less a fireplace versions, you know. So sit around the fire and have some fun, as if some fans would actually sit and sing some tunes, some favorite tunes of them, and have some fun. At the end of the day, the whole subject turned out to be a giant, so we had to switch to another record company during the production, and suddenly it was taken very serious. The whole album was taken very, very serious, and we even had to bring in some orchestral symphonic versions, which turned out to be great, but nevertheless the whole album suddenly sounded very produced and very, well, on purpose, which was not the plan. The plan was to have a loose, fireplace versions of all the top 10 songs we have written so far during the last 25 years, and have another kind of 25th anniversary album than other bands would do. Mm-hmm. Not a collection of already recorded songs, but a collection of well-known songs in different robes and different dresses, just to have fun. Now it came out to be a hell of a produced record and very serious, and I think the fans did not enjoy it that much.
Mm-hmm. Andy, why do you think that there was such a harsh response to the Unarmed album to begin with?
Because it's too much produced. It sounds like an album which is meant to be a crossover album for radio, for people who are into lounge music and classic music. Mm-hmm. It did not turn out to be the album we wanted to have, put it that way, because you don't hear the fun the band had or should have had in the studio, because honestly, in the middle of the production, it turned out to be a very serious production and the fun was gone. So you had a real pop acoustic classic production, which was not fun at all at the end of the day. And I think the fans realized that this is not a joke, as it's meant to be, but a serious matter.
Mm-hmm. Now let's get on the subject of touring. And the big question over here in the States, and a lot of people will be asking me this, and a lot of people have already emailed me knowing that I know you guys, is Helloween coming to the States? And do you plan on touring over here for this new album, The Seven Sinners, and doing another tour kind of like what you did last time?
Well, I think the last three albums we did so far, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't. I think we already talked about it, that we want to do 30 or 40 shows in the U.S., connected, if possible, with like after South America, Central America, then Canada and U.S. I mean, the last years we always did it, so I don't see any reason why we shouldn't do it.
And how did the last tour go for you, you know, as far as with Gambling the Devil over here in the States?
Well, States was great. Actually, I've learned to know and to love such a lot of cities in the United States where I've never been before. Mm-hmm. So, cool. I mean, on the other hand, everybody knows the United States is just a huge country. So, wherever you go, you probably find a completely different world there. You know, so it's a very interesting thing, because it's like traveling through Europe, where you actually would expect to see different cultures and different architecture or different people or whatever. You would not expect that from the United States, because you look at it as one big country, it's the United States, but actually it's like when you travel from the east to the west coast, it's like traveling through Europe, just bigger.
You know?
But you see a lot of different people, a lot of different mentalities, opinions, architectures, way of living, lifestyles. So yeah, it's actually more or less, because there are a lot of people out there who say there's no such as a traditions or cultures in U.S. America, which is a lie, actually, which is a great lie, because the United States are meanwhile over 250 years, so there is tradition, there is cultures, and the people actually love their cultures. When it's people coming from Ireland, they still got their culture. They try to keep it up and running the way the people from Germany or the way the people from France or wherever they come from, they try to keep it up. They try to keep it up and running, and they do it in their own way, and I actually love it.
Now, you switched record labels from SPV to Sony, and talk a little bit about why you had a change and why you decided to go from SPV to Sony and leave your old record label.
Well, so far I know that SPV, our former record company, had some bankruptcy or whatever going on there. So at the end of the day, they didn't went bankrupt, but it was very close. So we had an offer from Sony Music, and it was just the right time to actually say yes to the offer, because that's the more secure way to go as a band. You have to know where you're belonging to, and you have to know that the business is going on, because honestly, that's our job. So in this matter, you have to look at it as a guy who owns the company. So whenever you have a chance to keep your company nice, sound, and safe, you go exactly that way. No experiments.
that's what we did.
Now, you just talked about record sales, Andy, and do you think illegal downloading has affected labels quite a bit, and that's the biggest reason that sales are down and a lot of these labels are going bankrupt?
Well, sure it does, and sure it did. So there's no discussion about it, sure. I mean, that's something everybody knows. But I actually don't care about downloads and a matter of fact that the people or the fans, because if they don't have the money and they want to have their favorite band, hell yeah, I mean, I would get it too. I would download it as well. If I haven't got the money, but I want to have the new Halloween, I wouldn't give an S about it. I would just download it.
Yeah.
and hope to have the money for the album sooner or later in a year's time or whatever, and maybe I would then pay for my favorite songs from the album.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, I think the main reason why I am against the whole downloading is that in the future we only will have favorite famous bands where there are like little rich sons of some rich fathers who are actually capable of paying IT a specialist and a good production, because rich sons do have the money to go into a real studio to do great sound for their album, to actually pay for everything that you need being a band. The majority, like where I come from, like being from a normal family who is actually having to work hard for a filled fridge, we definitely did not have the money to go into big studios and pay our own production. So we are depending on a record company, and the majority of bands, newcomer bands I know, are depending on a record company who is actually giving the money for proper production, for a proper producer, for a proper studio, for a proper promotion, blah blah blah, you name it. So at the end of the day, I think in the future we will only see bands with at least one guy whose father is having the money, you know. And this is not exactly the music world I'm actually looking forward to, you know.
Well, Andy, thanks for doing the interview. It was a lot of fun. And just one last question for you here before we get going. Do you have anything you want to say to all of your Halloween fans here in the United States?
We had a die-hard rocking people down there, even what's the right word? Homeboy cities. So it was great for us to finally get to know not only the big cities in the States, but we had a chance to play lots of like mid-sized cities, which I actually learned to love. Absolutely great. So the American way of life I now may understand much better than I used to do when I only toured the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to admit that I fell in love with the United States, which I never thought is actually it would come true. So a lot of great people, got to know a lot of people who are actually very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Still in contact with those guys. Like, so far you had been the only guy I was actually in constant contact with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I proudly may say it's not only the Tony nowadays. So there are a bunch of great people down there in the U.S., great people, and I'm happy to get to know them, got to know them, and I'm looking forward to meeting them again, and hopefully to make some new friends on the new tour.